There is a new book out that captures pro football's top 100 moments. Here's CBS's Steve Kathan.
There's the helmet catch in Super Bowl 42.
It is caught by Tyree.
And 99 other defining pro football moments.
I just think that football is such a game of moments, you know? I mean, it's every play you're just waiting. Like, is this going to be something I've seen that will never see before, never see again?
Sports writer Joe Poznanski lays them all out.
I just think when you are watching a football game, you are lost in it.
In Why We Love Football, Poznanski says it's all about the individual efforts, upsets, and pivotal plays. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Is it just the NFL or is it overall football?
Pro football.
Why you got
pro football's top 100 moments?
Why has he got to lead with the helmet catch? You're a Giants fan, aren't you?
Yes.
Gosh, helmet catch.
Well, it's also there's a ton of
you. Did you like craft that story or something?
No, I had no idea that it was
helmet catch.
You know.
Helmet catch.
You could have gone anyway, though. I mean,
well, what about the Edelman catch in against Atlanta?
Yeah,
how about that one?
You could have done Alan Ameche scoring the winning touchdown for the Colts in the 58 championship.
Or the immaculate reception.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, we can go on forever here.
But the helmet catch. You've ruined my morning, John Silva.
Well, that's why we're here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Good to have you.
Thanks.
Let's go to Mark Christopher.
And now sports with Brian Shackman from the Cordell and Cordell Sports Desk.
That came on fast. Sunday night football, Kansas City holds on. They stopped Atlanta twice in the red zone on fourth down, and they win 22-17. They're now 3-0. Patrick Mahomes, two touchdown passes, one interception in the game. We actually have two games for Monday night football. You have the Bills and the Jaguars, 7:30 on ESPN, and Washington and Cincinnati, 8:15 on ABC. The New York Giants have had a terrible start to the season, but they sort of righted the ship. In Cleveland yesterday, Daniel Jones looked great. So did Malik Nabers, especially in the first half.
Jones on third down, looking end zone, throws, it's Nabers, touchdown!
They connected twice. They also had a running score in the first half. They didn't score a point in the second half, though, but they still hung on to a win, 22-15. I'll go through some of the elements of yesterday. Green Bay wins on the road against Tennessee, 30-14. You know, Titans quarterback Will Levis from Connecticut. He had two TDs and two interceptions. One of them was a pick six, though. Colts beat the Bears. Vikings, 34-7 over Houston. Sam Darnold, four touchdown passes. Philly comes back in the fourth quarter to beat New Orleans on the road. Steelers beat the Chargers. Justin Herbert hurt his ankle again. We're not sure what his status is. Broncos beat Tampa in Tampa. Andy Dalton, Big Red, three touchdown scores for Carolina. They beat the Raiders in Vegas. Seattle's now 3-0. They beat Miami. Miami backup Skylar Thompson, who took over for Tua Tagovailoa, he got hurt too. So now they're under their third quarterback. Kind of a disaster in Miami. Dallas, they lose again at home, this time to Baltimore, 28-25. Rams come back and beat San Francisco late, 27-24. And the Lions beat the Cardinals. In baseball, Red Sox, well, they had a big game from Tristan Casas yesterday.
He hit one in the left field. Montas says he hits this one high and deep. Back toward the triangle. Long run for Buxton, and it's gone! Into the bullpen. Three home runs and three at-bats for Casas, and we're only in the fifth inning. Can you believe it? Wow. Against the wind. A tremendous shot high and deep out where the pitchers stand in the Red Sox pen. And it's 8-1 Red Sox. What a show for Tristan Casas. The first three home run game of his career.
Three home runs, seven RBI. He basically beat Minnesota on his own. They win 8-1. Of course, the season pretty much done for the Sox. Not over for the Yankees. They beat Oakland 7-4. They got home runs from Jason Dominguez, Gleyber Torres, and Aaron Judge, his 55th of the season. They now have a six-game lead. They host Baltimore starting tomorrow. They win just one game in that series, and they will clinch the American League East. The Mets beat the Phillies 2-1. They are still in the thick of wild card contention. They're tied with Arizona for that second and third spots, and they are two ahead of Atlanta. The White Sox lose game number 120. That ties a modern era record of most losses in a season with the 1962 Mets, and they have six games to go. The Reds fire their manager, David Bell, before the season even ended, and Shohei Ohtani hit his 53rd home run of the season. WNBA playoffs, the Connecticut Sun off to a really good start. They handled Caitlin Clark in Indiana. The final 93-69. Clark really struggled. She was 2-for-13 from three-point land, only had 11 points. They'll play again on Wednesday. Brianna Stewart led the way with 20 points and 11 rebounds for New York over Atlanta. Minnesota Lynx over Phoenix. UConn alum Nafisha Collier, 38 points. Las Vegas beat Seattle. And that's your morning sports. Obviously, the big news last week in the world of business was that 0.5%, 50 basis point cut by the Federal Reserve. And this morning, stock futures are slightly positive. We got oil is actually back over $71 a barrel. We want to talk about this and a whole bunch of other sort of tributary elements of the rate cut with Jill Schlesinger from CBS News and Jill on Money. Jill, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. So, I mean, slightly, based on our conversations, slightly surprised by the 50 basis points, correct?
I mean, not so much. It looked like the Fed was sort of talking to a lot of folks off the record and sort of floating the idea of 50 in the week prior, the run-up. So there was about a 50-50 split on whether or not the Fed would go by a quarter of a percentage point or a half of a percentage point. They chose a half to get what they called, like, you know, a good strong start, according to Mr. Jerome Powell. But, you know, that said, you know, it's the beginning, right? And I can't stress this enough, that this is the beginning of a process. This is not just one event. We are going to see many rate cuts over the course of time and probably over the next year or two. And it doesn't mean that it's all over, but, you know, we're at around 5% in the Fed funds rate. We'll probably get to 3% by the time the Fed is all done.
Okay, so there's a bunch of questions. I mean, does that mean the Fed is a little more concerned about a possible recession than they were, say, 6 months ago?
I think that they are being very clear about their dual mandate. They've got two jobs, right? One is to make sure that inflation and prices are kind of under control. So no inflation, no deflation. So price stability, that's one job. The second part of their job, and equal parts, by the way, is to have a job market that is strong enough so that anyone who wants a job can get a job. And so the labor market is the other part of the Fed's job. And when you look at those two things, for the last couple of years, inflation has been the bigger problem. They focus on that. That part of the dual mandate has been the reason why interest rates have been at 23-year highs. Okay, now that the inflation rate is coming down, not prices coming down, the inflation rate is coming down, the Fed is now shifting and saying, whoa, wait, the labor market now needs a little bit of our love, and the labor market needs our love. And because of that, we are going to start to bring interest rates down. I was sort of surprised, frankly, that they didn't start at the last meeting in July, but they held off one more meeting. I'm not sure why, but they did. And so I'm not so certain that they think that things are falling apart. I mean, I think that Powell really went to pains to say, you know, the economy is solid. We don't see any recession around the corner. So all that being said, they made their best guess. They're human beings. They sometimes get it wrong, often get it wrong. And so what I think is important to remember is this is what they think, and they could shift at any moment.
We're talking with Jill Schlesinger, CBS News, and Jill on Money. You can go to JillOnMoney.com and look at her blog and listen to her podcast, a whole bunch of stuff. I guess what's important to our listeners is, well, how does that impact them? And mm-hmm. the first thing I mean, again, my default response is always to go to the real estate world. But I mean, how is this going to impact the average everyday American?
I mean, you don't have to go to the real estate market so quickly. Let's start with, you know, you're a saver. And you've been enjoying these amazing high money market rates, these high CD rates, these high yield savings accounts that are, you know, yielding 5%, 5.25%. That's going to slow down, you know. And what you always see, it's almost like gas prices, you know, like when it's in the favor of the consumer, it eventually will get there, but it doesn't get there as fast as you'd like. So gas prices, they came down, not as fast as everybody liked, but they're down. Same with interest rates. You know, it's when you see interest rates go up, it took a while to get those savings rates up really high. Yep. Now they're going to start to trickle down. They're going to go down faster than you would like. If you're a borrower, then you're going to see those rates come down a little bit. Let's say you owe money on your credit card and you're paying, I don't know, 24%. You know, it might go down to 23, it might go down to 22. It's still really expensive. Auto loans, those prices, those interest rates are going to come down. And we have already seen that mortgage rates have already started to come down. They went down from about almost 8% to 6.25%. They're going to come down to around 6%. So that's what you're going to see. But I think the housing market is unique in that, yes, the mortgage rate is important, but more important is the inventory of homes for sale. And that is still a problem. We still Right. don't have enough homes for sale in many parts of the country, especially here in the Northeast, where we don't build tons of new homes every year. And I think that that's going to continue to plague the housing market.
But a lot of people are sitting on 3% mortgages and might want to move. And if it gets down to 5 and change, that Right. might prompt them to put their house on the market.
That's what we're kind of hoping. Because, you know, and sometimes it's just in your mind, right? Because sometimes what will happen is you'll say, oh my God, I have a 3.25% mortgage. How could I possibly get an 8? But if it were 5.75%, you might say, ah, that differential is not so much. You'll start to see more people consider listing their homes. And, you know, last week when I was off from you guys, I was actually out in California interviewing a housing strategist. And one of the things that he really pounded into my head was, time is an amazing thing in the housing market. You know, it's not like a stock market that can really change direction very quickly. It takes a while to move this big ship called housing. It's an illiquid asset. It's emotional. People care. And it's almost like people need to get used to the level of interest rates in many respects before they start listing their homes. There are always going to be reasons to list a home, right? There's going to be a divorce, you'll list your home. There's going to be perhaps a death, they'll list a home. Maybe someone gets sick, you'll list a home. All those things are part of the process, but more and more people will say, eh, I got a 5% mortgage. What's the big deal? And that time factor is going to be so helpful to the housing market.
Jill Schlesinger, CBS News, and Jill on Money here on Brian and Company with our regular Monday 6:20 window to talk about the economy. In terms of data points this week, is there anything we should be paying attention to?
I think that this week is going to be kind of interesting towards the end of the week. Friday, we are going to get a report called Personal Income and Spending. And yes, we'll get some data on, you know, savings rates. But what is the important piece of that? There's a little piece, a data point called the PCE Price Index, Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index. And that's a measure of inflation that the Fed thinks is a better measure of where inflation rates are going than, say, the Consumer Price Index. So the only reason we care about it is because the Fed cares about it. And so that's going to be the big data point of the week. You're going to get a Case-Shiller Home Price Index out tomorrow. You're going to get new homes. It's not going to show too much. Focus on that Friday. And really, by the way, don't focus on anything. Relax. Have a nice time. Get ready for Halloween.
Okay. Okay. I'll do that.
All right.
I don't know what I'm not going to dress up. Those days are over.
You're not?
No.
Are you going to dress your kids up?
No. No. I mean, they're teenagers now, so I don't
so they don't
know.
Care.
They don't care. And they're not like mischievous in the sense that when we were, you know, going around town and causing trouble. So,
I think. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm learning so much about you.
Just yeah, like it's so interesting.
An innocuous little remark like that. Okay.
Yeah. And, I lived in a small town where we had to entertain ourselves, and it was not always a good thing.
I just want to say one last thing, because yes. I know you love this. You know, usually people like you and I, we are always told, like, oh, don't worry about October surprises for the markets. Worry about September, because it's a terrible market month, right? FYI. The S&P is up this month, and the Dow is at a record. NASDAQ's on track for the best September since 2016. Just putting it out there.
I know. I mean, the numbers are... I don't even focus on, like, the points that are up. It's only... I do percentages.
No, the percentage.
Now.
The S&P is up 20% this year.
That's crazy. Jill, thanks, as always. Great job.
Take care, buddy.
All right, Jill Schlesinger. Jill on Money and CBS News. Yeah, I mean, the... it's just with the Dow is at 42,000. I mean, I remember when they hit bottom, it like was like 6,700 in 09, right? And so that's, I mean, I'm no math major, but it's gone up 6 times in 16 years, 15 years. It's just incredible, the gains when you go back to the Great Recession. Really, really stunning stuff.
Finally, he hosted Blue's Clues, and now correspondent Deborah Rodriguez tells us what Steve's been up to.
We gotta find the culprit. That's the first clue.
Remember that guy? Blue's Clues Steve, real name Steve Burns, has gone from his 1990s Nickelodeon gig to TikTok.
Hello, what's going on? How are you? What's new?
The 50-year-old tells the New York Times these days he lives off the grid in New York's Catskill Mountain region, where he's continuing the conversation for his nearly 3 million now grown-up followers. In a recent post, he sits, listens, and nods for a full minute.
I just wanted to check in. You look great.
Burns says he suffered from undiagnosed clinical depression during his Blue's Clues years. He hopes to help others with a podcast coming soon. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Oh, yes, Blue's Clues.
3 million followers on TikTok is a lot.
I spent many an hour with my niece watching Steve.
I didn't watch that show. Is it good?
Well, not well. My niece liked it.
Right.
I can't say for Uncle John, but right. My niece liked it.
Uncle John suffered through it, but you did it because you're a good uncle. Yeah. John, thank you very much. Let's go to Mark Christopher in the Brown Panderas and Scott Traffic Center. What were the cartoons of the day with when Zach was a cherub?
Blue's Clues. What else? Oh God, I can't even remember them. What was it? Teletubbies.
They kind of disturbed me a little bit.
Yeah, they were a little strange.
It was unnerving.
Clifford the Big Red Dog, I remember that.
Oh, yeah, I love Clifford.
All the
He's a big red dog.
And then a lot of Disney Nickelodeon stuff. I remember Ariana Grande and
I don't miss watching those shows with the Dora. I mean, it's just
Selena Gomez, Witches of Waverly's Place, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember all that stuff. I watched that stuff over and over and over and over. And, of course, Sesame Street, too. So I like that fish, the goldfish. Na-na-na-na, na-na-na-na. Elmo's World, because Elmo had the goldfish. That's what it was.
I watched a clip of Animal from the Muppets going against Buddy Guy in a drum contest. It was incredible. It was incredible.
Some of that stuff was humorous, no doubt about it.
And now sports with Brian Shackman from the Cordell and Cordell Sports Desk.
Boy, I watched a lot of football yesterday. It was really, really fun stuff. I encourage people to go over to Plain English podcast. Derek Thompson talks about how quarterback play is down big time. Really fascinating. Let me just whip through Sunday Night Football in case you were already sleeping or moving on. Kansas City beats Atlanta 22-17. They're now 3-0, the defending champs. You got two games tonight. The Bills are hosting the Jaguars on ESPN at 7:30. Then Washington at Cincinnati, 8:15 on ABC. The Giants have a nice win. They really didn't do anything in the second half, but 21 points in the first half in Cleveland, enough to win 21-15. Green Bay over Tennessee, 30-14. Colts beat the Bears. Vikings, they're for real, 34-7 over Houston. The Steelers beat the Chargers. Broncos beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You had Carolina beating the Raiders. Andy Dalton had 3 touchdown passes. Seattle's now 3-0. They beat Miami. Baltimore beats Dallas in Dallas. You had the Rams beating San Francisco and the Lions beating the Cardinals. Now in baseball, the Red Sox behind Tristan Casas' 3 home runs and 7 RBI beat Minnesota 8-1. The Yankees put some distance between themselves and the Orioles. They beat Oakland 7-4, thanks in part to Aaron Judge.
Infield's back, payoff pitch. Swing and a high fly ball deep into center field. Bleday's moving back, still back on the warning track in front of the wall. He leaps, and it's gone! A deep home run into straightaway center field, just underneath the Holy Toledo sign here at the Coliseum.
Yeah, 55 for the season. Gleyber Torres and Jason Dominguez also went deep. They come home to host Baltimore tomorrow. They win one game in that series, and they clinch the AL East. The Mets beat the Phillies 2-1. They are still tied for that second and third playoff spot in the wild card with Arizona. WNBA playoffs. You had Indiana Fever coming to town with Caitlin Clark and got smoked by your Connecticut Sun. Yeah, that's right, 93-69. They'll do it again on Wednesday. Caitlin Clark, 2-for-13 from three-point land, only 11 points. That is your morning sports.
Local weather, WTIC's Bob Cox.
Well, the next 2 days look partly sunny with highs near 70. The next 2 nights look partly cloudy with lows near 50. And Wednesday shaping up to be mostly cloudy with the increasing chance for showers later in the day into Wednesday night and Thursday. Highs Wednesday afternoon, 65-70. Currently in Hartford, it's 52 degrees at the weather station, WTIC, News Talk 1080.
Become a member at AmericanEagle.org. Broadcasting from the Johnson Brunetti Studios, this is Brian and Company on WTIC News Talk 1080.
We had this conversation last week. There was a, I don't know if it was the anniversary of Matthew Perry's passing away or not. I was never a big Friends guy, and I've always been a huge Seinfeld fan. And it's weird, you know, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or Facebook, your algorithms sort of follow what it thinks interests you. And it ebbs and flows, obviously, based on what you're looking at. But I've had like a tremendous inflow of Seinfeld stuff over the last 2 months. And today is Jason Alexander's birthday. Obviously, George Costanza is 65. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the trajectory of the show. You know, people, I really credit Larry David more than anybody for the success. I think that Jerry Seinfeld, he's a good comedian and he loves his craft, and some people love him as a comedian. He's not a good actor, right? I mean, he laughed, and you look back at the scenes, he's almost laughing in every scene, but the show is great. But I credit Larry David a lot. But the show, people don't really maybe look back on it and get it that the show launched. And again, these shows don't often take off right away, but when they first put it on the air, it had 5 episodes in season 1. It didn't really get ranked. It was the 46th ranked show in its first full season. Its second full season, it was the 43rd ranked show. And then it went to 25th in its fourth season. And it didn't even crack the top 5 till its fifth season. It was third. And then in its final 4 seasons, it was 1-2-2-1. So, I mean, and again, these are the... I wouldn't say necessarily the heyday of television, but, you know, that phase of TV was when people still watched a lot of television, whereas now people just don't watch a lot of television because of their phones and everything else. And so here's just a little clip of a couple of classic scenes. I can't. Some of it's with his mother, some of it's the shrinkage scene, but here's the first one.
What are you doing? Did you just double dip that chip?
Excuse me?
You double dipped the chip.
Double dipped? What are you talking about?
You dipped the chip. You took a bite. And you dipped again.
So?
That's like putting your whole mouth right in the dip. Look, from now on, when you take a chip, just take one dip and end it.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I thought this was the baby's room. I'm really sorry.
I was in the pool! I was in the pool!
Oh, I'm out there,
no,
George.
You're not out there.
I am, too.
You're not out there. You can't be, because I am out there. And if I see you out there, there's not enough voltage in this world to electroshock me back into coherence.
I go out for a quart of milk. I come home and find my son treating his body like it was an amusement park.
And again, they went after some topics right there alone, you know, that were a little risque. You know, obviously, I'm not going to get into too many details, but like they took like relatively benign stuff, like stuff like the double dip. I never even thought about double dipping until that show. Like, you know what I mean? They things that you don't think about in normal everyday life. Were you a Seinfeld? I mean, are you too young?
It was on. I didn't watch it much. That was like the late teen years. I got too much to do to watch TV.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's probably true. You're out and about. But anyway, Jason Alexander. And he, you know, he's been in some good movies. He's had some good successes.
He was a scout for the Yankees.
No, he wasn't a scout.
Well, he was in the head office.
He was in the front office, and he taught Bernie Williams and Derek Jeter how to hit,
yeah.
Hit home runs.
Simple math.
You know, and this is a really serious turn, but we don't have time. I'll tease ahead to it because maybe at 7:50 I'll talk about this because George spent a lot of time on the show not working. And there's some pretty stunning statistics out about working age men in America who are neither working or looking for work. And, you know, at 7:50, I'll talk about it because they talk about the labor force and men of our age, Joey, There's, and then you can maybe even, if you're listening or Joey can guess, the percentage of men from the ages of 25 to 54 who are neither working or looking for work.
My guess is being like mid-20s.
20%?
Yeah.
You think 20% of working males are not working?
Yeah.
Or not? That's a pretty cynical view of the world.
It's, yeah.
Or are you just trying to trump the number?
No, no.
Before, you know,
cynical view of the world.
That's a lot of, that would be like,
I think
that would be about
that
probably
lower
like,
age.
That'd be like 15 plus million men you're saying are not working and not trying to work. Well, it's not quite that bad. I'll just tell you that.
Well, that's good.
I'll get into the details for you when we talk about it at 7:50. In the meantime, coming up at 7:20, we have Senator Richard Blumenthal joining us. We'll talk about the Safe Bet Act. We'll talk about the Kids Online Safety Act. We'll talk about the assassination attempts on former President Donald Trump's life and the investigation. He's got a big problem with the Biden White House. We'll talk about that as well. Your time, 6:57.